Shrink Wrap Radio number 5. Chris Ritke interviews Dr. Dave. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio. This is David Van Nuys, otherwise known as Dr. Dave, coming to you from Sonoma County, California. Now, usually, I interview fascinating people from around the world of psychology in the belief that everyone is interested in what makes us tick. However, today the tables are turned, and I was interviewed by Chris Ritke. I met Chris at the San Francisco Podcasters Meetup, and I was flattered when he sent me an email letting me know that he would like to interview me for his podcast, which can be found at www.49media.com. In the interview that you're about to hear, Chris does a very good job of drawing me out, and you'll find out quite a bit about my background and some of the projects that I've been involved in. However, we did this interview in a coffee house, and it was rather noisy in there, so there's a fair amount of background noise that you'll hear in the interview. Nevertheless, you will be able to make it out. So here we go.
Hi, I'm Chris Ritke, and I'm here with David Van Nuys, who's a psychologist from Rohnert Park, and you're also a professor in Sonoma.
Right, Rohnert Park, California.
Rohnert Park, California.
Sonoma State University.
Okay, good. And we're here in San Rafael at a coffee shop, so there's a little bit of background noise, but I guess that'll be okay. So hi.
Hi.
Now, you're on the web with the podcast at, what is that again?
Shrink Wrap Radio.
Okay.
Shrinkwrapradio.com.
.com. Okay.
Right.
So, and you're focusing on psychology in your podcast?
That's right, because I have a long history of being a psychologist, and it seems to me that everybody is interested in psychology at some level. I mean, we're all interested in what makes people tick and what makes ourselves tick. And because I've been in the field for a long time, and because I'm in California, I'm well-networked to a lot of very interesting psychologists. So the premise of the show is to do interviews that are about 20, 25 minutes long on various topics. And I'm going to be talking to people about dreams, about psychoanalysis, about gestalt therapy, about consumer psychology, about psychology and tarot. I mean, I'm just going to cover the psychology and politics, all sorts of stuff. So I think it should be fun.
Wow. And you already have three shows up. What are those about?
Actually, I've got four shows
up. Oh, four.
Okay. Maybe I got another one up since you were there. On one, I'm interviewing a local psychologist about intuition. He does workshops in the area on developing one's intuition. He had a lot of interesting stuff to say about that. I did another one. Quick, what did I do them on? Now I'm blocking. I did one with a psychologist who was visiting from Virginia. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Joseph Campbell and the Hero's Journey.
No.
Important book and television series based on the book. And this guy has done important work relating the dreams that we have to the hero's journey. I could do a whole session on the hero's journey, so we'll have to skip over that
right. One.
I did one. I thought, I tend to put myself in the background, and I've sort of set up the show that the focus would be on other people. And then I thought, I shouldn't do that. I should get myself out front a little bit, too. So I got together with a friend on a Skype call who I went to school with, like, a long time ago, when we were freshmen at the University of Pennsylvania. And this guy picked a fight with us. So I tell the story. I never thought that I would have to worry about somebody picking a fight with me when I went away to an Ivy League university.
Right.
So, and then I developed some psychological themes around that incident. And then in another one, I interviewed him. He dropped out of psychology right at the pinnacle of just finishing up his dissertation, his doctoral dissertation.
Wow.
And then he decided, no, I don't want to do this.
Wow.
But he had some interesting things to say about what he called the death of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've done so far.
Mm-hmm. And how did you originally get involved in psychology or interested in that?
Well, when I was a freshman, originally I started out as an electrical engineer.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was accepted into school mm-hmm. as. I was quickly intimidated, calculus,
right.
and I fled that major. And I thought, well, maybe psychology. So I took a introduction to psychology, and it was one of these large theater-type rooms with the tiers going down, and the professor was way down in the center, you know, and about 300 of us up in the rows. And he started the class off saying, "Welcome to Introduction to Psychology, the science of the study of behavior of animals and humans. And if any of you are here because you're interested in your friend's strange quirks or you want to understand yourself, you're in the wrong place."
Wow.
So my heart sunk, as did I think many other people, and he proceeded to prove what he said to be the case by, we learned all about pigeons and rats and so on in that course. So I crossed psychology off as a possible major at that point. But then time went on, and I think it was the summer between my junior and senior year, I'd gone back home to Los Angeles for the summer, and I got together with an old high school buddy over a beer. And so, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you going to be when you grow up? And he said, well, he says, I'm going to be a psychologist. No, he said, I'm going to be a clinical psychologist. I said, a clinical psychologist? What's that? Because my only exposure was mm-hmm. this other course. He said, well, it's like a psychiatrist, only you don't have to go to medical school. And I thought, hey, that sounds easy. You know, I think I could do that. I said, tell me more. He says, I'm a Rogerian. I said, what's a Rogerian? I never heard of that. He said, well, it's named after this psychologist, Carl Rogers. And his technique is, whatever the person says, you just kind of feed the same thing back to them. And I thought, well, geez, that sounds pretty easy. I think I could do that. So believe it or not, it was that thought that then when I went back to school, caused me to take a course in abnormal psychology. And oh boy, this was juicy. This was
wow.
what I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
This was all about people. So I decided I wanted to be a clinical psychologist. And that set me off on an incredible journey. First going to the University of Montana to get a master's degree. And how did I get to the University of Montana? Well, with indifferent grades and not an undergraduate major in psychology, I figured I better find some small master's program to get into. So I went to the library, I was looking through catalogs of different universities, and I found one that showed a picture of two guys throwing an anesthetized grizzly bear into the back of a pickup truck. And I said, this place will let me in. Well, they let me in provisionally. And after 2 years there, it was on to the University of Michigan, where I spent another 6 years. So in all, I spent 8 years in graduate school. And you know what? I thought I was following the easy path. I could have gone to medical school in that time.
Wow.
So, long answer.
Uh-huh. And then how did you end up in Sonoma?
I was particularly attracted to Sonoma State University because they were, at the time that I came, they were one of two schools in the whole country that had an allegiance to humanistic psychology. That had the right ring, again, because my interest is in people, not animals, it's in personal. And I've been very involved in what was called at the time the human potential movement. And so this sounded like the place for me to be. I had not planned to be an academic, actually. I had not planned to be a professor.
Mm-hmm.
I had planned to be a therapist. But at the time that I got my degree, the way that I was taught at the University of Michigan was, you didn't just run out and hang out a shingle. You had to have some gray hairs, some experience, and so on. Things have changed these days. People take
right.
a workshop, and then they're a therapist.
right, okay. And now, podcasting. How did you decide that you, or how did you find out about podcasting? How did you decide you wanted to do a podcast?
You know, I can't even remember how I first got exposed to it. It might have been the Wired magazine article it was either there or in a newspaper. As soon as I saw the word podcast, it was like this light went off in my head. I was already a devotee of my iPod. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like right away, it's like, podcasting. Now, how are you going to transmit to a podcast? So I was a ham radio operator, amateur radio operator, so kind of clicked with that too. And so right away, went out and went to Google, I think, and typed in podcast, mm-hmm. got a bunch of information, and then I can't tell you which show I listened to first, but it was probably either Adam Curry's Daily Source mm-hmm. Code or Dawn and Drew.
That's everybody else. Right, exactly.
As everybody else. And then I was hooked, and mm-hmm. I was and I thought, well, what could I do a podcast about? Well, I've been a psychologist all these years, so I thought I'd try to parlay that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now you're on your fourth show.
Yep.
And you're enjoying it?
Yeah, I am enjoying it. Uh-huh. I found it to be more of a technical challenge than I expected. Mm-hmm. As I say, I was originally going to be an engineer and an amateur radio operator. I understand electronics, but I really didn't understand sound. Line in, line out.
Right.
Decibels, bit rates, sampling rates, all of that stuff was new to me, as well as creating a feed and all these articles talk about how easy it is.
Right.
Maybe it's easy for some people. I needed some help.
Right.
And I got some help from a podcaster whom I've never met face to face, but I have to give props.
Oh, of course.
Say.
Yeah,
props
that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Rob Walsh of Podcast 411.
Mm-hmm.
Through email and Skype calls, he's kind of brought me along.
Okay.
And I am enjoying it.
Good. And what is it that you're trying to achieve with it? I mean,
I want an audience.
Uh-huh.
I want to get people excited and interested and just be provide a source of what I hope will be interesting content. The way that I listen to podcasts are, to me, they're a wonderful alternative to radio, as we all
right. absolutely
agree.
Right.
Radio sucks. And the time that I listen to podcasts are when I'm in my car.
Mm-hmm.
Without exception, when I'm not in my car, I'm busy. I'm busy doing other stuff. And I can't be listening to chatter. When I listen to the radio, I like to listen to talk radio. So what the world of podcasting has opened up is a limitless horizon of talk shows that I can listen to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't tune into many of the music shows, although every now and then I get a hankering for something mm-hmm. like The Roadhouse, where they play a lot of blues,
right.
and a couple other shows. So for me, it's about listening to talk radio, talk internet radio in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Okay, yeah, well, so do I. But what about the people that you wish to be listening to your podcast? Do you think are you aiming towards more people that don't have anything to do with psychology, or more people that are in the field, or both?
Both. Uh-huh. Yeah, I would love it if it speaks to people who are not in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of my prime targets probably should be psychology majors, undergraduate psychology majors, although they may be so steeped in their courses and the reading that they have to do that they may not want any more
mm-hmm.
Input. So I think maybe it's really more that general listener that I would like to excite. People maybe who would like to go to workshops that they see advertised, but they're expensive. This gives them a smattering of a lot of different psychological perspectives, and it costs nothing
mm-hmm.
to listen.
Right. And how do you see this new medium, podcasting, and compare it to the traditional media? And do you think that the traditional media is scared of what maybe you're doing, or do you think that they're going to embrace it, or how do you see those two relating to one another?
Oh, I would love it if they were scared of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the taglines that I have is all the psychology you need to know, just enough to make you a little bit dangerous.
Okay.
Tell me the question again. I just lost.
How traditional media and podcasting, and whether they're scared of it, and how you see those two coexisting, or one winning out over the other, or where do you see all that going?
Well, clearly they are scared of it. They are starting to bring out their own podcasts. major radio stations, magazines, and newspapers are all creating podcasts. And there's the danger that maybe the little indies will get shoved out of the way, will be harder to find, and so on. I'm not too worried about that, because I think we all seek diversity, and those people who come from a corporate perspective are going to, there's certain guidelines they're going to have to follow, so they're going to be constrained. Now, of course, one of the things that podcasting allows is for people to talk in more natural ways, to swear, to and so on. I think my show is going to be a clean one for the most part, just because it doesn't feel appropriate to me somehow to represent psychology in that raw sort of way. So hopefully that's not going to be the only appeal of podcasting, is just to hear people talk dirty, because you don't have to go far to hear people talk dirty.
And what about money? Do you plan on, or do you plan or wish to make money directly off of your podcast, or is money an issue at all, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, money was certainly not my motivation in getting into this. One of the things I didn't realize when I got into it was that if I were successful and the show caught on, it would begin to cost money for the bandwidth.
Right.
And for the bandwidth and the, throughput, that word.
Right.
Right. And so that could be problematic. Mm-hmm. You know, I've already invested, $500 or $600 in equipment, and maybe $5 a month for hosting at this point. And happily, because it's a great hobby at this point, and geez, that's not a whole lot of money to spend on hobbies. I've spent more than that on some other hobbies. But at the same time, if money-making opportunity came along, I would look at that. I'd think about it. In the back of my mind, I'm sort of wondering, maybe not with this podcast. Maybe there's some other kind of podcast. I got an idea this morning, actually, along those lines, sort of a more local idea. There used to be radio shows where you could call in for things that buying and selling, sort of like classified ads. There's no show like that on the radio in my area. And to run an ad in the newspaper is pretty expensive. So it occurred to me, geez, this would be a great community service. It would be mediated through a podcast. If there was a number where people could call in and say, I've got a 21-speed mountain bike that I'd let go of for $100. Here's my phone number. And somebody else says, I'm looking for a cheap engagement ring.
Right. Well, who knows? And but one thing I've been hearing a lot from people with blogs and with podcasts is that they don't necessarily expect to make money directly off the podcast or off their blog, but they've been seeing that they've been getting gigs in whatever they're doing, artists and all kinds of people. They've been getting big gigs because people have been finding them and finding out about them through their podcasts or blogs. So do you think that would be a way for you to somehow get things that you could do through your podcast?
Well, maybe. I need a product. I've often thought I need a product because I'm a market research consultant in addition to being a mostly retired professor, although I am teaching a class this semester. And but when you're a consultant, you can only make as much money as there are hours, and it's multiplied by what you charge per hour. So there is a limit. Whereas if you have a product, you can sell hundreds or thousands or millions of your products. So I haven't come up with a product yet. Although I am doing a workshop in Switzerland. This probably won't get out in time to benefit me, but I've forgotten the dates. But September 19th, I think, is when that workshop starts in Switzerland. A week-long workshop, sort of a personal growth-type workshop. And I suppose if I had a following, that might help to get people to workshops like that.
And how did it end up being in Switzerland, or why is it in Switzerland?
That's a good question. I'm doing it with, I'm co-leading this workshop with a former student who was a student of mine over 20 years ago. And he's become a very successful therapist to the stars and spiritual guru.
Wow.
And he has quite a following, and he does workshops all over the country and throughout Europe.
What's his name?
His name is Ron Alexander, Dr. Ronald Alexander. Thank you for prompting me. I'm sure you would appreciate the plug. And and he's very successful at it, very wonderful at it, and I just had this intuitive hunch that I would get his flyers. And I contacted him and I said, hey Ron, how about I co-lead with you? He was going to do one in Mallorca, and he had one coming up in Kauai. And I had an intuitive sense that if I proposed going to Mallorca, he would say no. But that if I proposed going to Kauai, he would say yes.
Uh-huh.
It turns out there are people asking to co-lead with him all the time. And he turns them down because it gets too competitive and so on. But he had an intuitive feeling when he got my email proposing that we work together in Kauai. He had an intuitive feeling of saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Kauai and co-led a week-long workshop with him. And we really clicked. And he said, hey, why don't you come to Mallorca? I didn't even have to ask.
Wow.
And so this will be our fourth year working mm-hmm. together. And we did it 2 years in Mallorca. And he wanted a new venue, and so he chose Switzerland. But I think next year, I don't know if Switzerland is the best venue. I'm thinking Italy,
mm-hmm.
and he's thinking Italy now next year. Mm-hmm. So start saving your pennies, everybody.
And so are those people that, when you do them in Europe, are those Europeans that go to those workshops, or are they Americans?
It's been a mix. The 2 years that we did it in Mallorca, it was a mix of Brits and U.S.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's all in English.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's about, 10, 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small, intensive workshop with plenty of time to go shopping in the local village and mm-hmm. go hiking and then cry your eyes out in the therapy group.
And what is the focus of the workshops? I mean, what do you do there?
It's a mix of Gestalt therapy work.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be another long lecture. Gestalt therapy was an approach pioneered by a fellow by the name of Fritz Perls.
Mm-hmm.
Many people would recognize the name. He was an Austrian guy who led workshops at Esalen Institute in California in the 70s. He passed away. He had a big influence on psychology and mm-hmm. created this sort of school of working, which was based on psychoanalysis, but brought in a much more of a... He had wanted to be an actor, so it brought in a much more dramatic approach
wow,
to
uh-huh.
therapy, where instead of giving the patient sort of analyzing, giving them interpretations, the patient is invited to, and we don't even call a patient, client is invited to dialogue with parts of themselves. He would have them move back and forth between two chairs, say. Somebody starts talking about their anger at their mother, for example.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of having it be abstract and in their head, he'd say, okay, imagine that your mother is in this chair opposite you. What do you want to say to her right now? And then he'd move you into the other chair.
Oh,
now, what does
okay.
your mother say?
Okay.
And because, really it's not the real mother that the difficulties lie with. Often the real mother has been dead for 10 or 20 years. But it's the mother that's internalized that one needs to come to grips with.
You know, it's funny, because yesterday I was listening to the radio, and they were talking about people who had lost their husbands and things in the 9/11, in the 9/11 tragedy.
Right.
And they were also saying that people are getting over it by a husband that they lost. Imagine that you're talking as they would be speaking.
Yes.
And then what would they be saying to you? Were they in a better place? So then they would say, well, just get on with your life and things like that. So that does that all have to do with that? Or
I think it's probably an outgrowth.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably one variant, one outgrowth. We also do another thing that's very interesting that we do is a dual hypnotic induction.
Wow.
Where we're each talking into the person is in the middle that we're working with. One person in the group will volunteer who wants to do this, and somebody will say, well, I've got an issue I'm working on. They tell us a little bit about the issue, then they come and they sit between the two of us, and one of us, and we're each doing a hypnotic induction, one in the left ear, one in the right ear.
Mm-hmm.
Now theoretically, one ear is kind of more hooked into the unconscious, the other ear is more hooked into the conscious, and so hopefully they get so distracted by it's more content that they can consciously juggle. So the suggestions kind of get through the defenses. And for Ron and I, it's like word jazz. We're improvising. We're playing off of each other. And we're jamming. It's fun for us, and it's profound for the people who are doing it. And then Ron leads meditation, teaches meditation. He's a longtime meditator, studied with many teachers around the world. I do things like get involved with Tarot in a very psychological way and use that for some psychological entry into people's issues. I probably will be leading some Tai Chi since I'm a Tai Chi student.
Wow.
I'm not really a Tai Chi teacher, but I am a Tai Chi student, and I can share that with people.
Wow, that is absolutely fascinating. That is really something. And so one last thing I want to ask you about is your book. And that, so, I mean, you do have a product. You have your book, at least, or a book that you co-authored.
Yes.
So what is that about that says this is the Zodiac speaking?
Right, this is the Zodiac speaking, and the subtitle is Into the Mind of a Serial Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Zodiac case was a famous unsolved serial murder case that happened in the San Francisco Bay Area in San Francisco, Napa, and Sonoma counties in the early 70s. And as I say, it was unsolved. In a way, it was the prototypic terrorist. It was before we had these terrorists. And this guy was manipulating the media in the way that terrorists do today by sending letters to the police department and to editors of the San Francisco Chronicle, the Vallejo Times, and so on, describing his crimes, threatening to commit other murders, sending in pieces of evidence, and this stuff was getting published in the paper. He threatened to blow up a school bus, for example. He threatened to pick off the little kiddies as they came off the school bus.
Wow.
So people who grew up in the Bay Area as children remember this today as adults. I've met people who say, oh yeah, my mother wouldn't let me go outside because of the Zodiac. So I was approached out of the blue. At the time, I was chairman of the psychology department at Sonoma State.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're chair of a psychology department, you sometimes get some strange phone calls and some strange emails. And this was one of the rather stranger ones that I got. Was an email from someone I didn't know who said, I wonder if you'd be willing to look at some letters of a serial killer and tell me what you think. And I said, well, I sent back an email saying, well, I don't have any particular experience with that, but send me a letter or two and I'll noodle around with it and see what you think. And then I thought, well, what if this is the serial killer? And he just kind of wants a read.
Right.
Well, later I found out that this guy was an author, a local author, who successfully published several true crime books. And in fact, his most recent book had just been the subject of a 4-page review in The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
if
you're in The New Yorker,
right, then
you've made it. So
right.
I felt good about working with him. And we worked my job on the book, and he got very excited about my noodling with these letters. And so we collaborated. He would send me a letter, and I would noodle and get it back. He said, hey, my book was practically written, but I'd like to reorganize it around your analyses.
Hmm.
So that's what he did. And we worked very quickly. We had it done within about 3 or 4 months.
And what's his name?
His name is Michael D. Kelleher.
Uh-huh.
And people can find this book on Zodiac, on Amazon.
Oh, they can, okay.
On Amazon. There, I was amazed. You know, I was not into this, but there are message boards. One's run out of Amsterdam. They get thousands of hits a day. About the Zodiac case, still.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed. There is a whole worldwide subculture of interest in this case, just like with Jack the Ripper. This is a case that's on a par with that, I would say.
And so to find it on Amazon, they just type in, this is the Zodiac speaking or something, then they'll find it?
Yes, or they could type in Zodiac and they would find it, or type in my name, David Van Nuys, that's V-A-N space N-U-Y-S.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, David, thank you very, very much. That was absolutely fascinating. I enjoyed this very much.
Well, that's it. I sure hope you enjoyed this podcast. I know that I did. Today was a red letter day for Shrink Wrap Radio because we finally got our artwork up and appearing in the iTunes music store. So be sure to check that out. Please email your comments to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com and tell all your friends to visit us. We'd love to get audio comments as well, which you could send to that same email address. I've got lots of great guests lined up for the future. And you can leave audio comments on Gizmo Project for the name Shrink Pod. Finally, if there are any podcasters listening, let's talk about swapping promos. So until next time, this is Dr. Dave reminding you, it's all in your mind.